Well, we're going to fire up some open lines here. We've already got a bunch going, but we'll make room for you. So grab one of those lines, and we'll find out where you're going to take the show coming up next. We're going online at coasttocoastam.com. You see a lot of great stories up. Always want to let people know when they go to coasttocoastam.com, you know, kind of, if you can, just budget like about 25 minutes of reading. Because you'll start reading one story, and you'll be like, oh, man arrested after calling 911 about an axe-wielding Sasquatch on the attack. And then next thing you know, you're reading the story about the French village that offers a reward for the solution of a very unique, strange stone mystery. And you'll scroll down, and you see the stories that are being featured in the news section. And then, who knows, you might even click over to Paranormal Date, because you are not alone out there. So schedule a little time with coasttocoastam.com tonight, perhaps while you're listening to the rest of the show, and some great bumpers coming up too. On Coast to Coast AM, in for George Norrie, this is Ian Punnett. Well, we left, I think, one person stranded on open lines, or sorry, under our segment there with John Douglas. One person didn't get a chance to ask a question of John Douglas that I know that they wanted to ask, but I didn't get to all my questions either. So tried to do the best we can in those 2 hour interviews. Let's go to open lines and we'll pick up where we left off, because Joe is hanging on from Long Island. So sorry about that, Joe.
Hi, Ian. One of the things, an interesting topic, some of the things I've heard for profiling of serial killers was one of violent video games. You know, I know most video games are violent, so I don't know about that. Another one was at a certain point, there was a guy from New York historically called Son of Sam, who was a postal worker, but they found in his place a stack of girly magazines that was like into the thousands. So that was another thing.
There is, I think a lot of, I mean, Ted Bundy certainly made the claim before he died that, you know, he became a serial killer because of pornography. And I don't think there's a lot of causal proof of that. And there may be some anecdotal evidence that suggests that it's true often. Let's go back to that thing you mentioned, because I actually do know a little bit about this, not so much about the violent criminal, but there's been a lot of work, even in media circles, academic circles, about violent video games. And whereas it's one of those stories that presents in a way that makes sense, you know, you know that these, you know, these kids that are shooting up high schools were just, you know, just hours earlier were just playing some first-person shooter game. And you know, so that truly one thing led to another. And it really, there isn't a connection, I don't think. And I don't think it's ever been proven to be a connection because of the ubiquity of video games. And so, I mean, everybody's playing them at a certain age, that there is no, for the, If we're to say that somehow one thing causes the other, then we would have literally millions of these people walking around, you know, trying to find guns and shoot people in malls or high schools or whatever. And that's just not happening. So right. I think it's a temptation, and it got some traction for a while, but it just doesn't bear fruit.
Now, another thing, too, I would say, if you look historically, say, for example, Henry VIII, now, he didn't actually kill these women, but I consider him a serial killer. You know, so I'm wondering if there's at a certain level, a disassociation. In other words, someone shoots the arrow in the Middle Ages and it kills someone. Well, they say, I didn't do it, the arrow did it. Or Henry VIII, he said, you know, have these women guillotined. Now,
well, most of them weren't. So let's be clear about that. And what's your reason for saying that? I mean, because remember, the difference is, as head of state, the idea of having an heir was so crucial. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm not defending Henry VIII for his excesses. But it was sort of almost a national emergency in the perception of a monarch that they have an heir. And that was part of what people expected in their government. It was the better solution than violence, of having somebody attempt, you know, to take the throne because of an absence of a rightful leader. I mean, heck, that's just Game of Thrones theory right there, man. You know, I mean, that's the whole point of that. Well, let me roll and go to Steven, who's in Mesa, Arizona, on Coast to Coast. Hey, Steve.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well. Going to be in Mesa in a couple of weeks, actually.
Hey, it's been a great show. And
thank you.
You know, I just have a couple concerns about everything that's been going on, and I've been listening to your show tonight, and I just can't help but wonder how you would feel. Like, let's just say, for example, you were accused of robbing the local grocery store down the street, the one closest to you.
Sure.
And you said, I didn't do that. And then the police investigated the whole thing, right?
Yep.
And you wouldn't got a lawyer, okay? So now... And then they went through the whole thing and they said, okay, we don't have any evidence to convict you of that. And so then now this is on Channel 2 now, and Channel 2 is talking about how you robbed your local grocery store. They've already convicted you of it before you were even tried. You were guilty before you were ever tried, which is not the American way. We both know that.
Well, stop right there for a second, because I'm willing to go with you in this scenario, but... TV stations, your Channel 2 scenario, they have not convicted me. They're not allowed to, and they don't. And so Channel 2 will say, police report that this has been the case, or they say he has been accused of, or allegedly. But, you know, they can only, the fact that they can report is that an authority is reporting it. So they can't.
That wasn't what I heard about our president, the president of our United States. That is not what I heard from the media.
Oh, you're turning this political.
The media said that he was a traitor.
Yeah, well, everybody throws that word around these days.
They convicted him.
Hold on a second. You want to turn this into politics? I don't. So I don't agree. So I'm just going to say I don't agree to the contract of this conversation. I don't want to turn it into a political conversation about President Trump. And I just hope you'll accept that. There's plenty of other radio shows where you can do that. They exist. And they probably somebody who's willing right now, ready and waiting to take your call on that. I thought you were going for something more interesting. And so that's my mistake. Let me go to Bob, who's in San Diego on Coast to Coast AM. Bob?
Yes, how are you?
Doing great.
I was holding on, I was thinking about something. I'm from Michigan originally, and probably in the 70s, there was four children that were murdered over a period of maybe a month or 6 weeks. And they were like, I guess, under 12 or something like that. And they never caught the guy, but the last one that they did, they found the stomach still warm when they found him. About 10 years later, there was a report in Michigan that there was a similar thing in Atlanta. And they were looking to see if it was the same person. And I don't think anything ever came of it. And it's kind of interesting to hear he killed four boys in Michigan, and the same and another similar situation happened in Atlanta.
Well, that's very interesting, and I think this is where, again, in a way, this is something I was going to mention to John Douglas before the end of the hour, but it got away with us. And that's the books like this one, The Killer Across the Table, yes. and true crime have become a de facto arm of our judicial system, because as you point out, these are interesting connections. Well, who's going to investigate those? You know,
right.
Which police agency has jurisdiction? Who's got the time to allocate the resources? And it comes down to, it's really going to be a lot of private citizens, authors, internet, you know, bloggers, people who are creating digital product on YouTube. These are the people who are going to have to crack some of these crimes. They really are. Or find out who the real killer was, which is, again, part of the same process. So here's...
It's interesting because I just saw this on a bus today, a $52,000 reward for a friend of mine's daughter who was murdered. And
right.
The story came out maybe a few months ago where they found the guy had taken his own life recently. And it was the guy that they knew who the guy was, but they couldn't find him. And when they found out who it was, and her parents were in the house when it effectively happened, and he ran out of the house, and they couldn't find him. But now it was a big write-up in the newspaper saying that he was the one, and he's no longer with us. But I said, I have to call her father tomorrow and say,
sorry, I lost you in the audio. Kind of.
They found out who the person was, but he was already dead when they found out.
Well, Bob, I appreciate that the audio got a little muffled there, so I'll say give you my response on that here as I move forward, is that, you know, you mentioned a $52,000 reward. And so, again, I know this is crazy, right? And everybody's probably wondering, like, you know, the boy's not right. But if I were a grieving parent, instead of offering some pie-in-the-sky reward, which sometimes happens, sometimes doesn't, I grant you that, but over time, those leads tend to go real cold, and it becomes harder still to get media to promote that, to get a local TV station to say, hey, still call this number if you have any information or whatever. But I wonder if you took $10,000 and you hired a would-be true crime writer and say, I'll pay you $10,000. We don't even know if it's going to get published, but I'll pay you that to do the investigation and find out, you know, see if you can point to a killer. I bet you you'd get more traction in the end from that author being able to turn around and sell that book to a publisher and get more publicity than offering a phone number and a plea, although I know their hearts are in the right place. Joseph is in Indiana on Coast to Coast AM. Joseph?
Hi, and I...
Hi.
I had a question for you there about UFOs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
With our nuclear silos and stuff, how Linda Moulton Howe and a few others had reported that...
Yeah, she was just on this week, wasn't she?
Sightings and stuff around our silos and stuff like that.
Right.
And I was wondering if you or anybody you know has noticed an increase in UFO activity overseas there around Asia and stuff since the Rocket Man's been playing with his firecrackers or around that time period, if there's been any increase, like there's a sign of interest in that stuff over in that region.
You know, I will say I am much more interested in just what you said there about referring to the leader of North Korea as Rocket Man and being suspicious of him than I am falling for. He's our new friend. So I'm very suspicious of all of these rockets, and I don't need to know what's in the nose cone of them. I still think I think he's up to something. But yeah, so I haven't heard anything about that, and that's always interesting. I know that globally, this is what somebody sent me, that globally reports of UFO activity are up, but domestically there are not many new cases to be talking about here in the United States. What does that tell you?
Pretty interesting.
Yeah, if that's true, what does that tell you? I mean, that all of the hot spots are somewhere else.
Yeah. Like, you know, along the lines of that and stuff, and like, are the cattle mutilations and stuff that Linda used to mention, are those still ongoing too?
Well, there you go. See, I thought she was just on, and I'd have to defer to, because I didn't hear the show that night. I'll ask Dan Galante back in the studio, and thank you, Joseph. Wasn't Linda on recently, right? Wasn't she on, like, within the last week or so? Oh, with George Knapp last Sunday? Yeah. Yeah, recently. So take a look online. You know, if you have Coast Insider, of course, you can always... You can time travel anytime and listen to the Coast shows that you missed. But I saw that on the schedule, and I've been wondering about that too. I don't have, because now I'm living like in cattle, you know, cow mutilation territory here in Kansas. I will report something that I did today with my younger son. So my kid, Itchy, as we call him, my two boys, Itchy and Scratchy. Itchy's in town this week, and we had a list of things we were going to do. And he's 25. He's wrapping up his master's degree. And so we had, But he likes to travel and he likes doing stuff. And so we went to an insect zoo. And those of you who follow me on Twitter at Deacon Punnett on Twitter, you'll see that I was at a reptile zoo. And these are all just because my kid wanted to go see him. And so we were doing that. And today we went to the famous Wamigo LSD missile silo. You're not supposed to go there, but we did. And the story is, if you don't know this, Wamigo is a town not too far from Manhattan, Kansas, where I teach at Kansas State University. And it's almost wrapping up. It's like school's out for me, I think, as of like there's one more test I have to administer, but I'm pretty much done with the semester. But so we went to Wamigo's LSD missile silo. This was a place which was a former, military missile silo. And it's on a farm. There's a hangar nearby. And it was at one point the most prolific site for the manufacturer of LSD in America. That almost all of the LSD that was in the United States. Well, take that. No, I'm wrong. I'm underestimating. The world's LSD supply came from this one abandoned missile silo outside of Manhattan in this town called Wamigo. Now, Wamigo makes claims to other things. They have an Oz winery and an Oz museum, and they dedicate a lot of their stuff to the Wizard of Oz, although I don't think Wamigo has anything to do with Frank L. Baum or the story. They just decided to claim it, and so they have all this Oz stuff around, and it's a wonderful little town. There's a little roadside diner place. I almost want to tell Guy Fieri about it. It's a place called the Cream Cup in Wamigo, and they do the best roasted chicken. But nearby, the LSD silos that at one point supplied the world's needs for LSD from this one little town. And I was there earlier today just driving around. It's kind of cool. Anyway, let me get to Louise. She's in Louisiana. She's in Louisville on Coast to Coast AM. Louise?
Thank you, Ian, for taking my call. I mentioned to George several years ago when I first called in that any comments that I make can be documented out of respect for the program and out of respect for you all. This comment has to do with Cleopatra. You know, I always talk about Cleopatra and Mother's Day coming up. Cleopatra was called the Mother of God. The reason she was given that title is because Julius Caesar, before he was killed in March, was named by the Roman Senate as a god. When she had his son Caesarion, they said that she was the Mother of God. This is why she was given the title, the Mother of God. And then she was also called the Virgin Mother. The reason she was called the Virgin Mother is because she was a virgin when she and Julius Caesar first got together. A lot of my information comes from the book Cleopatra Life by Stacy Schiff, which is on the New York Times bestseller list. Those are the only two comments I would like to make. She was a great mother, and as you know, she had four children, one by Julius Caesar, three by Mark Antony, and she was the only queen of Egypt who had children and was not married and did not have a king.
There you go. Thank you so much. James is in Missouri on Coast to Coast AM, east of the Rockies. James?
Hello, Ian. How you doing?
Good. We're coming up to the bottom of the hour, but I think I can work you in.
Okay. I can identify with your last guest for the simple fact that I did a long time, and I was in maximum security prison for 18 years. And if you're in prison like that, you have to learn to read people.
Sure.
Who will hurt you, who won't hurt you, and so on, okay?
Yeah, I believe you. Totally believe you.
And with that, I brought that out here with me. And it's kind of a burden because I walk around in society and I judge the people that I associate myself with that. If they appear creepy, if they stare at people too long, if they just their body language, and it's getting safe.
Could I? I want to ask you to hang on. Would you be willing to hang on for me throughout the bottom of the break here, the bottom of the hour?
Yes. Yep.
I want you to. Donna, if you would. Danny, if you would. I want to come back to that thought. I'm very curious about that and the things that he learned in prison for survival and where they have a place and don't have a place in, well, let's call it Gen Pop, right? General population out here. So thank you so much. We'll get back to that. And where are you going to take us? We'll give you all the numbers you need to join us for Open Lines coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. In for George. So heading in our first hour here on Open Lines, we'll get to your call coming up in just a second, but I wanted to hold on to James just a little bit longer. We'll talk to James. He spent some time in prison, and he learned how to read people because, of course, it only makes sense when you're trying to survive. And I just wanted to drill down on that a little bit more, so we'll do that next. And thank you for hanging on. James from Missouri. East of the Rockies, next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Going back to open lines in just a second, but thank you, James, for giving us a little OT. So you mind if I like treat you a little bit more like an interview here real quickly?
Sure.
So I won't ask you what you went in for, but...
Robbery, first degree.
Okay, thank you. But my question was really more like, so how do you gauge yourself when you went into the yard for the first time or when you're in prison for the first time? What were you aware of about yourself when you walked into prison that you may not have either expected or that you were hoping wouldn't be true?
I was aware of, I was scared, yeah. Vividly, okay? But it's in prison, you can't show fear to anybody in prison.
Right.
And especially in a maximum security prison, they'll take advantage of you severely, okay? They'll take your stuff, they'll beat you up, they'll rape you, they'll make you theirs. I didn't realize the danger of the situation that I had put myself in until it was too late. I didn't realize the fact that for the next 18 years that I'd be living around and with death.
Yeah. In that sense, was prison not a deterrent for you when you were starting a life of crime or however long you lived in this life? Did that not seem as real?
Well, I didn't start doing wrong because it was more appealing or anything, or because that I wanted to live that life. My parents, that's a long, convoluted story, but my dad told me whenever I was 14 that it was my life and I could live it the way I wanted to. And prior to that, he hadn't been a good dad.
Right.
Okay. He hadn't been the upstanding, this is the way you live.
Right.
Okay. And I knew right from wrong, but in the beginning, I was just lashing out. I was looking for attention.
Right.
And then the police dropped the ball, okay, where they should have taken me and tried to counsel me, they should have put me into either had me go see a psychiatrist or a psychologist, made me talk to somebody.
Right. It would have helped. I mean,
yeah, it would have helped greatly.
They treated you like a lost cause.
Then there were certain circumstances that happened over the course of my life. For the next, from 14 to 20, okay, whenever I went to prison, whenever I was 20. I was in prison before I was 21. Mm. Just because I wanted to get the courtroom process over with and, come on, put me in prison, let's go, let's start it so I can get out and, you know, try and flip my life around and try and be a productive citizen in society, okay, and never come back to this because I realized before I went to prison that you messed up bad, Jim.
Right.
You know, So when I was 16, a woman that I'd met shot herself in front of me.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and right before she shot herself, I was too far away and didn't understand the 10-foot rule, okay? If you're within 10 feet of somebody and they go to pull a gun on you or a knife or a weapon, and you're quick enough, you can get to them before they can utilize the weapon.
Ugh.
Okay, and if you know what you're doing to defend yourself, you can get the weapon from them.
But you didn't.
I've done that since I've been out of prison, and I did that in prison, too.
But you didn't do it then, and you did. Am I guessing right when I say you carried some guilt with that?
Yeah, I carried some guilt with that. I wasn't close enough, and she was just a little bit quicker than I was, or she saw me coming. But she pointed the gun at me and told me under no uncertain terms she'd kill me and then kill herself.
Okay.
So I backed up. She shot herself, and
that's it.
And the police department there, they didn't bat an eye. They just questioned me and figured out that, well, yeah, she did shoot herself. And then they let me go, and I went home. I went to my dad's at his work, and he instead of trying to give me counseling or anything,
right,
he took me to the bar that night and got me.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Well, I'm going to help you forget it.
You're right.
Thanks. I still remember. I see it now.
Well, let me ask you something. So you mentioned something very interesting, and then I'll cut you loose. But thank you for giving me this extra time. When you were in prison, you learned how to read people and find out who were the dangerous ones. What did you look for?
Body language. The way they sit, the way they stand, the way they watch people, the confidence in them.
Oh, interesting.
For instance, here's a scenario. Have you ever either been in a fight or seen a fight fixing to happen between two people?
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever seen one of the individuals, either towards you or towards somebody else, say, "I'm not scared of you"?
Yes.
Guess
yes.
What?
And they were drunk. Yeah.
No, they're terrified.
They're terrified.
Yes, they are scared, literally, of you. Okay, and that's them trying to convince themselves that they're not scared of you. Those are some of the most dangerous people, some of the most dangerous individuals in those circumstances.
The people who are trying
out to, and there's anything that can happen.
They're trying to prove something, and so
they're trying to prove something, and they're not going to back down in front of their friends because then they look like the coward.
So
whereas. You or yourself or the other person that's just standing there looking at them, they're more of the killer. They're more of the one that has the confidence that, well, I can hurt you at any time. And there's nothing you can do about it.
This is what they say, by the way, about bulldogs, that bulldogs generally aren't very excitable. But part of that is because they know there's something innate about them. They know that because they're low to the ground, they're very thick, they got all this loose skin, they'll finish any fight that you start. And that's why they tend to be dogs that just sort of stay out of it until they come in and finish it.
Yeah, they have to.
Yeah. And then, so then my contrast question was, now that you're out, where do you see that type of behavior? And how do you see the world differently now that you went through that experience of having to make quick calculations about people who could harm you?
Well, because I was in there and because I lived around the people that I lived around, which 80% of the population in there would kill you for looking at them or talking to them or bumping into them. And you don't necessarily know that you bumped into them. Okay. How do I apply that out here?
Yeah.
I apply it in my everyday life. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, four people that I call friend,
right,
on this planet that actually are around me on a daily basis. Okay. And I pick my friends, I calculate okay? And I watch them and see the things that they do and the way they act around people. It's just
you can trust
spot the creep. I can spot the creep walking across the parking lot.
All right.
Okay. Like he was talking, like your former guest was talking about with the guy with the camera at the pony park.
Right.
Yeah, I'd have seen him too.
Wait, let me ask you one other question. If we met on the street, James, you and I met, what would you be looking for in just, you know, drinking me in for that moment? What would you be looking for as indicators on whether or not you would trust me?
Whether you'll look me in my eyes when you talk to me, whether you face me or not,
right?
The confidence in your step, the way you walk.
Interesting.
The way you talk, the words you use. You're intelligent. You're smart. I would have to put you in the category of a genius.
Well, see, you just blew all your credibility right there.
No, I think you're smarter than what you think you are.
Yeah, that may be true, but that's funny. Well, listen, thank you so much for that. I was really appreciate that. There was something about you just from the second you picked up the phone, and I just knew I was going to learn something from you. So I hope everybody else enjoyed that too, and I appreciate the extra time. You should write a book, and then we'll have you back on as a guest on Coast to Coast sometime. Let me go to Wayne, west of the Rockies in Tacoma, Washington, on Coast to Coast. Wayne.
Good morning, Brother Eon.
Good morning, sir.
Since the mention of Henry VIII, may I honor you and W. Sir Eon.
Yeah.
So now I have a trinity of coast to coast. We've got Sir George, and we've got Sir Richard, and we've got Sir Eon.
Yeah, this is Richard, who's coming up tomorrow night, mean on Coast to Coast, hosting.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, how come not Sir George Knapp? What has he not done to deserve this?
Well, yeah, you know,
he's as worthy as any of us.
I got Sir George already, so.
Got to count him in. You got to do that. So where are you going to take us then, Wayne?
Yeah, well, just a quick mention before what I want to go into, our famous Tacoma serial killer that you were talking about earlier.
Yeah, Ted Bundy.
I went to... Christian meetings with him, Voice of Christian Youth, or VCY, Voice of Christian Youth. That turned into something else later, but it was VCY back in, 1958, 59, about then. I didn't notice anything too unusual about him. You know?
How old would he have been? He would have been like 10 or 11 or something, right?
Yeah. That's about what we were at that time, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, that's so interesting. Yeah, I remember this learning about Ted Bundy, a little bit about that phase in his life. And obviously it comes back into play later on when he's in Florida and he plays on, Dobson to come and visit him and manipulates, I think, a lot of people through that. What did you think of him when, you know, I'm not saying you were best buds or anything, but what did you think of him? What was your impression of Ted Bundy?
Well, he was just another one of the kids in the group there. I think he was drinking in some of the spiritual stuff, but apparently, it just didn't really take too hard with him. But I think Joe from New York really hit the nail on the head because pornography is pervasive, and it leads down a dark road. You know, you're a theologian. We call it sin. Other people call it bad behavior or negative behavior and that. And, you don't get to heaven by a balance of good over bad. and that's all the religions of the world kind of base their eternity on getting to heaven by having more good than more bad. But that, Jesus said, all of our goodness, our good deeds are as filthy rags. No good.
Well, and you know what, though, at the same time, when we look at, even if we're to quote the Bible, there's, Song of Songs is a very intentionally erotic portion of the Bible. And
yes, and purposely so for married people. I mean, you know.
Well, yeah, but I mean, granted, but I'm saying that what's interesting about that is that there's a line between, you know, pornography and eroticism, and where's the role in eroticism, and so, you know, if it were just pornography that would be leading you down this path and that would turn you into a killer, I think then we would have had, there'd be many more married serial killers out there that were in this position. I don't think that there's a causal relationship, because it's so, again, we're looking at like a massive amounts of pornography are consumed in the United States every day. And it doesn't turn people into serial killers. I think Ted Bundy was using it as an excuse. Not to say that there isn't truth to what you're saying. I understand that when we get fixated on something like that, but I don't know. I don't think it was just that at all.
Ian, it's a gigabillion-dollar a year business, you know, and it cuts into people's work time. You know, it's stealing money from labor and industry.
No doubt about that.
So it is a horrendous problem.
But I'm not arguing for it to be good. I'm arguing for it to be whether it's this causal relationship that Ted Bundy claimed that it was. And because I'll tell you, I mean, I was, you know, I'm going to out him. So my friend Gary Kretschmer and I, we found a stack of Playboys in a neighbor's garbage, right, when we were in like third grade. And we carried those things away like raccoons with a pile of fish. We were just like, oh, my God, and so we were third graders looking at that. And, you know, I just don't think, you know, there's a natural curiosity. I don't think it was in 1958. I don't think Ted Bundy was, or even into the 60s or 70s, I don't think he was, that the pornography was the big play. And I think he knew that that would work well with some people to say that, oh, look, I'm a victim too. But that's how narcissist sociopaths think. They're always the victim. And you don't have any sympathy for me. So now he's come up with a way for people to be sympathetic. So maybe I just look at Ted Bundy as a bad example of that. Maybe we just have to have a better example if we're going to have a better conversation. But Wayne, I appreciate your position on that. And I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying I think there's more we have to hold in tension before we can come to that conclusion about Ted. Anyway, wild card line. Let's go to, let me get to Scotty. He's in Tennessee on a first time caller line. So we'll do Scotty before the top of the hour. Scotty?
Hey, morning, Neil. How are you?
Good. Thanks for hanging on. Thanks for making this your first call.
Yeah, no way. Good to have you as my first time.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah.
If I had a nickel.
Yeah, I guarantee it. I've got one comment, Neil, and I'll let you go. I'm a Christian. I believe what the Bible says. I just the way I was born and raised, and that's my belief system.
Sure.
Checking out most of the sciences and stuff of that nature, everything that God has created has a blood in it. Plants, animals, us, everything has a life source, which we identify as blood.
All right.
Me personally, I think that's what is inside of the earth is oil. What we call oil is what is this planet's blood. And I think that as we're taking it out faster than the earth can replenish it, that's why you're seeing more earthquakes and natural disasters. It's the same as the human body. When it starts bleeding to death, it starts convulsing, going doing things that it normally wouldn't do because it don't have what it needs to sustain it.
That's an interesting comparison. A lot of people in fracking territory would agree with that. We're out of time. I'm running out of time, so I want to get to that. But real quickly, just because we only have a few more seconds. So if we stopped oil, we stopped using oil, what would happen?
I think that the natural cause and effect of the way things that the Lord made it, it would try to reverse itself and replenish.
All right. Okay. Love that thought. I mean, I just mean, what would happen to the planet? That would the planet start to heal if we stopped draining it of its blood? Interesting thought. I like that. Well, we got one more hour left of open lines, and as you can see, you know, it's wide open. We don't know what you're going to talk about, but that's kind of the fun of it for us too on this end. And you should take a look at all the big guests that are coming up this weekend. Always fun on the way. Coast to coast AM.com. In for George Norrie, this is Ian Punnett.